Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
And of course, this is Racing Across America. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. Thanks also to our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB during their championship meet. We appreciate the support of Gulfstream Park. Of course, we are now in the countdown period to the Pegasus. Really looking forward to a potential showdown. Life is good. Knicks go in the Pegasus next week and some other nice stakes. We will certainly talk about that as the week progresses. And then, of course, next weekend on the morning programming as well. Looking forward to that. You know, I've been saying it now since the Breeders' Cup. We've all been kind of anticipating right after the Breeders' Cup, the possibility was there, and then it started to firm up, and then it just became, you know, horse racing being what it is, and you have a couple of months, is everything going to work out as planned? You know, knock wood, so far so good, and so looking forward to next week, certainly. But again, we appreciate the sponsorship of Gulfstream Park. Welcome to all our viewers here in the Albany-Saratoga area, which has warmed up slightly since yesterday. When I drove in yesterday, it was minus four. I didn't look at the thermometer on my dashboard today, but it was not that cold, so it has warmed up a little bit. So, again, welcome to all the horse racing fans tuning in this morning in the Albany-Saratoga area and beyond. I should ask people, you know, Roku. We've been on Roku now for... been one of the channels on the Roberts app on Roku for just over a year now. We kicked off just before New Year's last year and immediately got a few emails from folks who said, hey, we found your channel, really like what you're doing. Then up at Saratoga this past summer, I ran into a bunch of people who are watching out of state on Roku and enjoying the programming. But I am always curious. And so if you're out there watching on Roku or our stream, because people watch on the stream too, and I know they're watching outside the immediate area. So if you are outside our immediate Albany Saratoga area, but you're enjoying either via computer or on Roku, give us a shout. Viewermail at capitalotb.com. Viewermail, all one word, at capitalotb.com. Or tweet us, tag us on Twitter. I'm Seth Merrow 2, the number 2, or tag at capitalotb on Twitter, and just let us know if you're enjoying the programming from other venues. Always curious as to, who's out there watching now that the technology allows it, really, wherever. And as I say, immediately after Roku came on, immediately after Roku came on last year, I got some nice emails from folks. And again, at Saratoga, I was kind of surprised by the number of people who were enjoying the programming from outside the area. But if you are, as I say, just give us a shout. I'd be curious to know. Today's program, we'll do as we normally do on a Sunday. We'll take a look at some of the stakes action from yesterday, obviously with concentration on the really nice card at Fairgrounds. Speaking of which, let me just pull up because there was that all stakes pick. Let me just see if I can pull up the charts quickly. And I'll toss those payoffs into the mix as well. But with the nice stakes card there, we'll take a look at the couple of stakes from Aqueduct and also the stakes action from Fairgrounds. And then coming up a little bit later on, taped this interview actually a couple of days ago, but there's a new movie coming out, and it's coming out sooner rather than later. According to our interview, it's supposed to go into wide release starting next week. So we can look forward to that. Hopefully it does show up here in our local area sooner rather than later. But the movie is called Jockey. Independently made for, a relatively modest amount of money as compared to what most movies are made for these days. But bounced around the festival circuit last year and won some awards at Sundance, a prestigious film festival. It was up in Toronto for the prestigious, again, Toronto Film Festival. Movie's called Jockey. Shot at Turf Paradise, and reached out and had a nice interview a couple days ago with the director and the writer, young guy, Clint Bentley. Spent a nice portion of the morning a couple of mornings ago, talking to Clint, and put together a nice little interview talking about the movie, the experience shooting at Turf Paradise, a working racetrack. The cast is Clifton Collins plays the lead character, the aging jockey. Great job. Molly Parker plays a trainer. They're both established actors, but a lot of the cast, that there are other jockeys in the cast played by real jockeys, and they do a great job. The general manager from Turf Paradise plays a veterinarian in the movie, and a little small part, but he did a nice job. So again, a little bit later on, we will plug that interview in, talking about the movie Jockey that is set to have a wider release fairly soon. So you can look for that either in a theater near you, or I would expect, you know, at some point streaming as well. And I was surprised. I went there. If you're not familiar, there's a website called Rotten Tomatoes, of all things. But it is an established movie-related website that aggregates critics. So if you click on a certain movie, you can see what all the critics across the country had to say about that movie. And it puts together a total and then lets you know, here's what the critics thought overall. And I was surprised by the number of reviews that this small movie had gotten, not being in wide release yet. But then it dawned on me, he had taken it around the festival circuit, and all the festivals have critics that show up. And so I'm sure that was a function of the festival circuit. But he had a number of, he being Clint Bentley, the director, writer, and the team of Jockey, wound up with overwhelmingly good reviews on the website. So again, maybe something to look forward to, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. I do have here now the chart. Let me just take a look, because there was that all stakes pick five, and it paid well because there was some upsets in that sequence at the end of the day. Yeah, for 50 cents, that all stakes pick five, $29,000. And we'll talk about some of the results that played into that big price. But first, let's go back to Aqueduct. We had a couple of stakes yesterday. First, the Jazzle. I liked First Constitution, but I was a little concerned about Empty Tomb, who had beaten First Constitution in First Constitution's last race. Subsequently, Empty Tomb had run second in the Queens County, and I was a little bit concerned that I was putting First Constitution over that horse that was in good form that had beaten him. But Empty Tomb out. I have no criticism. They're going to take a shot. I think it's ambitious, but Empty Tomb scratched, and they'll head to the Pegasus. And we talk about this Titanic, you know, this hypersonic duel that will happen. I suppose if you have a horse that's in good form, why not maybe take your shot and hope the duel knocks both of them out and you wind up with something special? So, you know, as I say, I think they're being kind of ambitious with Empty Tomb, but I can't argue with it, really. But that one scratched. Splice the Main Brace scratched. So some early speed scratched out of the race. That left First Constitution as speed and the Chad Brown Klarovich runner as speed. But it turned out First Constitution was more the speed of the speed. And as you can see, by the time they got to the top of the stretch, First Constitution had put away Core Conviction. They were kind of dueling early. Core Conviction, number five, winds up last, fades to last. They were dueling. First Constitution, though, pulled away about halfway on the turn. And the way this track is playing, you had to feel pretty good. And First Constitution then continues on. YY Paul Y second, 12 Volt Man third. But First Constitution for Todd Pletcher and company gets it done. The first victory in the United States after starting the career down in Chile and running pretty well down there. I said it yesterday. There was the horse, Janelle Monet, down at the fairgrounds that was a little bit interesting starting in North America for the first time. And I said it yesterday. I've said it many times on here, looking at these kind of horses coming up from South America. I always take a wait-and-see approach because they can go either way. I tend to think, and it's anecdotal, but I tend to think more often than not, they don't quite stack up class-wise. But occasionally, they turn out to be very good. First Constitution was just a little bit of an unknown. Certainly good, but hadn't won since arriving in the United States. It had four starts last year. After the early part of the career in in Chile, had four starts there and started the career with three wins, including a group one down in Chile. So there was some talent in South America, but again, that doesn't always translate. Came up here to North America, United States, last year, four starts, had a couple of seconds and a third, and it kind of looked like I say, I take a wait-and-see approach on these, but this one looked good enough to, the right spot, and yesterday looked like the right spot. Put that one on top, and sure enough, the first stakes victory for First Constitution in the United States. Be interesting to see, you know. I mean, it wasn't a super strong field in there, but it'd be interesting to see what they have planned for First Constitution going forward now. But again, it was a nice effort yesterday, just kind of taking control under Jose Lescano and putting them away on a track that, again, over the past couple of weeks has kind of played into that scenario. Also on the card yesterday at Aqueduct was the Franklin Square, $100,000 for New York bred fillies. Sandy's Garden, the number one horse, owned by James Doyle. I think that's my old friend Jim Doyle. Jim and I used to do some video around the racetrack, and some of it wound up on Chris Lincoln's show. And Jim subsequently got his law degree, and I think based up in Saratoga, and doing some breeding and bred this horse. I'm reasonably sure that's got to be him. And so I was kind of rooting. I did not use Sandy's Garden, but I was kind of rooting for that one. Around the far turn and into the lane, as Sandy's Garden, the number one horse, did have the lead early, but will get run down by number two, Sterling Silver. I did not use Sterling Silver, but by Cupid, had lived up to the win early breeding, winning the debut effort. And here, start number two, gets a stakes victory. So Sterling Silver could be a nice one for Tommy Albatrani. Trevor McCarthy was on board. Jose Lescano on board Sandy's Garden. That one holds on for a clear second. And thinking it over third. Moam, who I liked, ran fourth. You know, it was an okay fourth. Well beaten. But that one still lightly raced, coming off a debut victory as well. So Moam may be one to kind of watch. Because as I said, it was an okay fourth for stepping up and start number two in the stakes company. Lilu was the 5-2 favorite and wound up fifth in there. So that one a little bit disappointing. But again, Sterling Silver, in two starts, two wins, including now a stakes victory as well. So nice performance there. And again, Sandy's Garden, a good second that one's third start in the career. So maybe a couple of horses on the, you know, the three-year-old filly, New York bred side of things to keep in mind. All right, we will take a look now at some of that stakes action down at the fairgrounds. There was a DQ in this race, and I don't know whether we're going to pick it up early enough for the DQ, to look at the DQ, and I'm not sure it makes a difference, because to me it was a tough call for the stewards. Just Might was clearly the best horse in this race, and you'll see that down the stretch. Colin will run second, but on the back stretch, Just Might, as they come out of the gate and Just Might kind of clears the field, he starts to come over. And the head-on shot, the two, who is inside Just Might, kind of, I don't know, anticipates, seems to shy away. And at that point, the jock takes a little hold. And at that point, it just escalates. And Cowan then goes over and tries to bite the one horse on the inside of him. And they both squeeze into the rail. The one horse goes to the back of the pack. And so as you watched, as the stewards looked, you knew they were going to have to do something, but was it going to go on the five coming in, or was it all on the two? And from the head-on, and yesterday, and I said it in here, I never saw the pan again. The stewards kept looking at the head-on, and I was curious as to how clear, or if the five, the winner who was eventually DQ'd, was clear, and it was hard to tell on the head-on. Subsequently, when I went home, it wasn't really clear, but it was still tough to tell. This isn't the race because it's the turf race, the eighth, the Kenner. As I say, Just Might was clearly best, but it was a tough call. It was a very tough call for the stewards, I thought, because again, it was hard to know whether the five really came in and bothered the two, or there was a little bit of anticipation for that one. But as I say, given what happened to the one, they were going to have to do something. But all was said and done, they did take the five down. Placed last, which was unfortunate. Here we go. And you see Just Mike comes into the lane in the lead. Cowan, who again was part of that and got steadied there a little bit, runs on nicely for second. The horse that was on the rail and got really bothered is in the back of the pack, runs last. And eventually, Just Mike gets disqualified to last behind that horse. But again, it was just unfortunate because, as you can see, Just Mike, really nice sprinter. I was going to say turf sprinter, sprinter. And that's what makes this horse so nice. Started the career and won a dirt sprint stake at the fairgrounds. Followed it up winning the Shearer Memorial last time on the turf sprinting. Ah, here we go. Thanks, Dan. And you'll see it. The two horses on the rail, watch them and watch the horse with the white cap. That's the eventual winner. And the two horse is going to kind of, they're it seems like there's still room for him, but he anticipates and then he tries to grab onto the one on the inside and you'll see them. Then they really squeeze up. And you can see Colby Hernandez on the eventual winner look back. He said to the stewards, I thought I was clear. But again, it's hard to tell here from the head on how clear he is. And when I looked at the pan shot, there's some trees, and so that's also a little hard to tell. But I don't think the five is completely clear. But still, I think the two reacts before things really close up. It was, like I say, for me, it would have been a tough call. And the stewards looked for a long time. But eventually, they did take the horse down. And again, given what happened to the one, something was kind of going to have to happen, but it was unfortunate is what the upshot is of all that, because I think Just Mike, a really nice sprinter, would have wound up with three sprint stakes wins to start. The meet. You know, that's just incredible. You're fairly early still in the meet, mid-meet maybe, but closer to the beginning part of the meet. Three sprint stakes wins on two surfaces, but winds up getting that one taken away from. Subsequently, Cowan is put up. Cowan, you might remember from early in the career for Steve Asmussen, had shown some promise. And in 2020, had run second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint behind Golden Pal. That was the, again, on the turf, and subsequently they went to the dirt. You know, now they're going into the three-year-old season. You have a talented two-year-old, and you try the dirt, and the horse ran decently on the dirt. Second in the Springboard Mile, second in the Smarty Jones. This past year, as a three-year-old, went to Maidan and tried a turf sprint and was up the track there and laid off from March until September. Came back and ran decently in a couple of starts at Churchill, and then came down to Oaklawn and tossed in a little bit of a clunker, all on dirt. And so yesterday they go back to the turf, and we saw what we saw earlier in the career with that nice second to Golden Pal in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Despite getting kind of crowded on the rail, still held on to run a very good second and then benefits from the DQ. So again, it was disappointing for the winner, who was I think was clearly best, but it was a nice effort from Cowan, and you would have to think the game plan for that one now will be to continue to look for some turf going forward. All right, let's move on, and Fairgrounds. Oh, and I also have buyer numbers. Cowan wound up with a 94, and I want to say it's cut out here. Let me see if I can pull it up quickly, but where I pulled it up from our friend Steve Vick's Twitter feed, the buyers, and when I printed it, it cut it out, but it also gave the buyer for Just Might, which was a really nice buyer. Let me see if I can just pull that up again, and because I want to say it was over, yeah, Just Might was 102 buyer, so again, it was unfortunate, the DQ. So the winner, Cowan, winds up with a 94, though. In the Krantz Memorial, we're looking at mile and a 16th on the grass. And again, this started out that $29,000 pick five and started it in fine fashion. If you played past the plate, that one does get it done. Last time out was on the dirt up at Churchill. But the turf races were much better, so you could expect an improved performance from that one. comes from off the pace here, the number 10 horse past the plate. At 8-1, Lovely Ride runs second at 4-1. Adele Miss third at 14-1. The favorite was Abscond at 3-2. That one winds up the one horse sixth in the field of seven. But boom, it is a head bob there that goes to past the plate. Again, 8-1, you wind up with $19 if you use that one to start the pick five. You knew you were off to the races for a potentially big payoff. And again, if the sequence played out in your favor, nice job is all I can say, because it wound up paying very well with a couple of nice prices in there. And again, that one was a little bit of a stretch, at least for me. I had it underneath. I put Abscond. I'd say a little bit of a stretch. I had it in the second spot, but I thought Abscond was interesting. The betting public obviously did too, making that one favorite. That one disappointed a little bit. But again, past the plate, I suppose I say a little bit of a stretch. I suppose I had it underneath at 8-1. That was one. I didn't play the pick five, but that was one that was an interesting one to include, I suppose, given I thought did have a little life. Janelle Monáe, the horse I mentioned earlier that was coming up from South America, a little bit disappointing. Went off as the second choice? His second choice at 9-5 and wound up fourth in the field of seven for Brad Cox and company. But again, it was the first start in the United States. Hadn't started since April, so we'll give that one another shot going forward. In the 11th race yesterday at the fairgrounds, it was the Silver Bullet Day. I took a shot with Burna Breezy, and afterwards I was kind of kicking myself. I should have used the winner, Lacrete. Lacrete, the number 5, will be the winner. Fanny and Freddie, the number 1, runs second, and the horse I like, Burna Breezy, at 5-1, runs third. But Lacrete, I like Lacrete in the career debut at Churchill back in November. Why? This is his sibling to Clairiere, and Clairiere had just shown so much talent earlier in her career, and now her younger sibling is living up to that. And you can see, this is a tough ask for a horse to come back on the inside like that, because about the eighth pole, it looked like, oh, this one's done. Fanny and Freddie is going to hold that one off. But no, Lacrete comes up inside of that one and gets it done. Chart margin winds up to be a length. Went off at just over even money, so the betting public liked that. But as a sibling to Clairiere, Lacrete, again, I probably should have put that one on top. I just thought Burna Breezy was going to be a little more interesting at a price. Running third at 5-1 was kind of interesting at a price. But Lacrete, going to be interesting to see on the three-year-old filly scene, where I don't think anybody's kind of jumped up and made a whole lot of noise. At least that we have horses like Echo Zulu and whatnot, but we will see how the three-year-old filly scene plays out, and I think she will be interesting now, having made a little noise in her career debut in a maiden special, but that's not enough to kind of put you into the marquee. But a win like this gets you in the conversation, and with the breeding, certainly gets you in the conversation. And Scott Blasi, Steve Asmussen's assistant, said after the race, hey, there's nothing that beats breeding, and certainly this one, a little bit of a blue blood, being a sibling to Clairiere. And Lacrete got a 74 in that victory yesterday, 74 buyer. In the Colonel Bradley, this also helped if you had that all stakes pick five. The Colonel Bradley, older horses, mile and a 16th on the turf. It is going to be number 12, 40 under, and number 2, Halo, again, with number 6, 2 Emmys in the mix as well. Number 6, 2 Emmys was the 5-2 favorite. You can see out there on the lead. And number 12, 40 under, just keeps grinding, with Halo again coming up nicely. And, it winds up to be a ding-dong battle here with 40 under getting it done. Chart margins ahead. I'd like to see the photo there. That looked closer than that. But 16 to 1, you wound up with $34 and change for 40 under. Mitch Morrell on board for Mike Maker, coming out of a couple of stakes tries down here at the fairgrounds. Ran fourth in both of those. The numbers were okay. That was one of those horses that you could have made a little bit of a case for. To me, there were horses that were a little more intriguing in there, including both Halo again and 2 Emmys, and so they were right there in the photo, but just could not hold off 40 under, who again at $34 and changed added some very nice value to that pick five. And 40 under, boy, that's a solid 96 buyer for 40 under, 96 there. In the Louisiana, you know, these kind of races, you get a nice solid field that includes a couple of titans, at least comparatively speaking, and it seems like more often than not they turn into the lane, and maybe one of them's there, but one of them's faded, but not yesterday. It wound up to be the battle that folks were waiting for in this race. It was the return of Mandaloon, who hadn't been seen since the Haskell last year, and Midnight Bourbon coming out of a third-place finish in the Clark. And they faced off, top of the stretch, they were right there, and it was a duel. When I handicapped, I tilted towards Mandaloon, and Mandaloon will get it done. You can see here, it's undecided at this point. It can go either way. But Mandaloon, as they get closer to the wire, starts to edge away a little bit under Flojo, Florent Giroux. Joel Rosario is on board Midnight Bourbon, and it winds up to be a nice comeback win for Mandaloon. Both of these, though, looking pretty good starting out their four-year-old seasons. And this was a 106 buyer. Very solid. Both are supposedly headed on now to the Saudi Cup. We'll see how that plays out. But I thought pretty good, again, four-year-old seasonal debut for both of these. Midnight Bourbon just continues to run well, but light on the victory side of things, but continued his career of running very well yesterday. But again, always fun early in the year to watch the three-year-olds on the Derby trail, but also to see what older horses are going to kind of play into those handicap division races as the year goes along. And coming out of a good three-year-old season last year with a nice crop, it's going to be fun to watch and see how they transition to four-year-olds. Yesterday, Mandaloon and Midnight Bourbon certainly indicated early on that they are players in that division. All right, and finally, let's take a look at the LeCompte on the three-year-old side of things. I was interested to see how the betting public would shake things out odds-wise. I mentioned that yesterday. Papa Cap was 8-5 on the morning line. Epicenter was 9-5. Morning line odds maker was pretty good. I wasn't sure, would they flip? Would they separate? They stayed that close, just the way the morning line had it. $1.50 to a dollar was Papa Cap. $1.60 to a dollar was Epicenter. So they were dead close, but Papa Cap was slightly the favorite. I thought Epicenter was the horse, it was the one I went with, let's put it that way. Epicenter's the number five, Papa Cap the number three, but Call Me Midnight. Look at the late run on the outside. This is really nice. Now, they set down some fractions here that on a track that wasn't playing that fast, the fractions kind of led into this closing effort. Trainer Keith DeSormo said with the fractions, he thought the horse would run better. He was a little critical of his winner, who just gets up at the wire and does it at 28-1. So again, that played into that $29,000 pick five. But as I say, Keith DeSormo was a little bit critical of his horse, saying, yeah, you know what, the fractions, I thought we'd really go right by him. And so he was again, a little bit hesitant to dump too much praise on his horse. But as you saw at the replay, about the 16th pole, this horse had a lot of work to do. That was a nice performance, I thought. Epicenter second, Papa Cap third in there. I thought Cyberknife was also interesting. Betting Public also used that with the third choice at 5-1. But Cyberknife, a little disappointing, sixth in the field of nine. But I have to add, if you were watching Racing Across America yesterday, hats off to our friend Joe Christofek, because he handicapped the race. And as we were wrapping up, he said, do want to mention the horse I'm going to play as my long shot pick in the LeCompte. Call Me Midnight. Joe Christofek's long shot play in the LeCompte. And he tossed that out there and talked a little bit about that one. And 28-1. Nice call by Joe Christofek. And Call Me Midnight winds up with an 88 buyer for the win. There were some undercard three-year-old stakes races. And I said during the day as we watched them, I'm going to be interested to see what the numbers were for those, because it was one of those big days early in the year with a big three-year-old stake on the card, and typically you'll have, you know, a few of those maidens or allowance races for three-year-olds that may produce three-year-olds to watch going forward. And there were a few of those on the card yesterday. And again, I was kind of interested to see, you know, what the numbers would be coming out of those. And I don't know, given the numbers, whether there's going to be a lot of confidence in some of these winners. Pioneer of Medina for Todd Pletcher did get an 80 in an optional claimer, non-winner, so one other than. It looked pretty good doing it. So Pioneer of Medina may be worth watching. Ferociously, who first-time starter by Violence from Steve Asmussen, I thought that race, just looking at the field and the breeding and whatnot and the connections, I thought that race might be productive, and I thought Ferociously ran well. Only a 64 buyer, though. That it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence going forward. Gunfighter, maiden special winner, got a 79. Peaceful Waters, a 77. Tis of Thee, a 78 on the turf. So there was numbers, like I say, I don't know whether they're enough to get your juices flowing necessarily going forward. All right, we'll take a break. Let me set you up, because when we come back, we'll go right into the interview I taped. Again, we're looking at a little preview of an upcoming feature film, racing-oriented, racing-related feature film called Jockey. Cast includes Clifton Collins playing the lead character. He got an acting award out at the Sundance Film Festival, deservedly so. I had a chance to see the film. He does a great job. Molly Parker plays a trainer in the film. She does a great job as well. They filmed at a turf paradise, and it looks great. They filmed a lot of it, obviously, at dusk, and it's just golden hour and looks great. And of the reviews, mentioned Clifton Collins and his great job acting, but they also mentioned the look of the film, and I'll agree both of those, well done. Writer-director Clint Bentley, young guy, obviously. He and his partner, his writing partner, who collaborated on this film, had done another film previously. So they're just kind of kicking off their film careers. Independent movie, done with, obviously, a much lower budget than the big, you know, the Hollywood films, but they did a great job. And going to the festivals, they wound up signing with Sony, and there'll be a wider release starting next week, so you can look for that. But we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll show you the trailer to give you an idea of the movie, and then we'll jump right in with the interview I did a couple of days ago with writer-director Clint Bentley. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Out of all the things you do in life, there's that 1 minute that you feel like you're the most important thing in the world because everybody's watching you.
I was a great jockey for a little while.
How you doing, Jax?
I'm doing real good. I'm feeling good.
Just tell me what's going on.
It's just wear and tear.
You've done some damage. You need to get yourself to a doctor.
You are a doctor.
I'm a horse doctor.
You seen that new kid been training at Jerry's barn? Yeah, he can ride. Come on.
coming across as stress. That's right. Let them feel it. I'm going to push back. I'm going to push back. Push back. Push back.
You know, when you get older, you start to realize that you and your body, they just ain't the same.
Look, I know I'm not in the same shape as these young cats, but I still got a good couple years left in me.
We've come this far together, right?
Yeah. You can just have a little quickie. I mean, just a dance.
I might be a little more shaped than what I thought.
I saw this photo and I thought, what if I could be somebody like that?
I'm sure you caught wind of my winnings and came to some conclusion, but you know, by the time your earnings get carved up, there's not a whole lot left for the jockey.
There ain't no better world. There's just this one.
Happy to be joined now by the director and the writer of Jockey, Clint Bentley. Clint, good morning.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you, and looking forward to talking a little bit about Jockey, the movie. I'm a film school graduate myself, and now I handicap the horses, so it's a great tie-in for me, and I was excited to have you on. When I started reading about the movie, maybe 3 weeks ago or a month or so ago, I was looking for some contact info and wanted to get you on, and then subsequently you were on the Bick radio show right before I was on a week or so ago, and I was talking about how I wanted to have you on, and Jay Hovde reached out and he had all your contact info, so we're happy to have you on this morning. We just took a look at the trailer so people have a little bit of an idea what the movie's about, but as you're explaining, how do you explain the plot to people?
Oh man, the plot is it's about an aging jockey who is kind of contending with his last season on the track, whether he likes it or not. And he starts to realize, you know, as he's aging out of the sport against his will, he's thinking about what has it actually all been worth and what's actually important to him. But the bigger way I like to talk about it is just that I'm the son of a jockey and the movie really came from a place of just feeling like I hadn't seen a lot of movies that really showed the life of a jockey as it as I've seen it and as it really feels on the backside. And so I just wanted to take people on a journey back to the barns in a way that they hadn't seen it.
Yeah, and reading your bio info, I saw that you were a son of a jockey, and I was going to ask you how that tied in and propelled you to want to make this story.
It really was just, I had a lot of memories of it as a kid, and I spent a lot more time with my dad at tracks when he was a jockey as a kid, and then he became a trainer as he got older, and I became a filmmaker, and then I remember we were at Ruidoso, actually, and I was cleaning stalls for him one summer between things, and I just had that feeling as I was hanging out with those people at the track, and feeling, especially a track like that has so much character and it feels like it's from a bygone era, that I hadn't really felt that on screen, and I really wanted to capture that.
Yeah, you conveyed it beautifully, and we'll talk about it over the next few minutes or so. But I saw also, I went to your IMDb page and saw you did a short, I want to say named Nine Races. Was that kind of a prelude to the feature film?
It wasn't, the story's not connected at all. It really was just a proof of concept to see if we could end up making this movie on a live working racetrack. Because it really from early on, when I was thinking about this feature, I really wanted it to feel as realistic as possible. And part of that was trying to get as small of a film crew as possible onto a live working racetrack, because there's so much cinematic value there, as anybody knows who's been to a racetrack or been back to the barns, that you could never reproduce with a no matter what your budget is. And so that Nine Races was kind of a proof of concept to see if I could take a film crew into a live working racetrack and film that safely. And then also, test out this model of working with jockeys, real jockeys and trainers, and having them act in the movie alongside real actors and actors who do this professionally, which we ended up doing a lot in Jockey, working with a lot of jockeys and trainers.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that as well, because that certainly, the authenticity just comes through the screen. Certainly, you know, you talk about the photographability of racetracks, and up at Saratoga every year, I have some of the top racing photographers on, Barbara Livingston, Skip Dixon, oh, yeah. and then Dave Harmon. And I always ask them, as a person who started out, as I say, going to film school and looking through the film camera, I always ask them, and it's true for them, you know, do you just see pictures all day long? Because as a film guy, when you spend time looking through the camera, you can't get away from it. You walk around, and the racetrack is the perfect shot. It happens all over, but the racetrack, you're right. You walk around, and, oh, there's a great shot. There's a great shot. There's a great shot. Talk a little bit about how you wound up scouting locations and how you wound up at Turf Paradise.
Yeah, and even more than great shots, it's great scenes. Yeah. I remember my writing partner, Greg Cuidar, and I, we were doing some research for the project before we really started writing it, because he had never been to a track before. And so I took him down to Sam Houston in Houston, and we just spent some time on the backside with jockeys and trainers. And I remember we were having a conversation and just talking to a trainer, and then everything went silent because somebody was yelling because a horse got out of a barn and was running around. And we all just kind of stopped, and this whole drama played out, and then they caught the horse and put it back in the stall, and we all went on with our day. And it was just that, like, there's just scenes happening all the time there that all you had to do was turn on a camera. But yeah, finding the track was a really long process of looking all around the country. I knew I wanted it to be a working class racetrack, like not one of the big Triple Crown tracks. And because that's so much of the industry thrives on that working class side of things. And so, you know, outside of that, finding a track that also looked the part, because so many tracks these days have been, you know, they've been updated and modernized, and they look more like casinos than racetracks. And so eventually landing on Turf Paradise, that just felt perfect. It had such a spirit to it, and still does. And then meeting Vince Francia there, who is the general manager over there, and he just totally, you know, I felt like I was in very good hands, and that our film was in very good hands with someone who understood what we were doing and what we were trying to do, but also had our backs in terms of making sure we could get the shots we need, but also do it safely and make sure that we were taken care of, but also that the horsemen and women were taken care of as well, and the horses.
Well, now that you mentioned Vince, I wanted to bring him in because I had a chance to see the movie, and Vince actually has a part, the general manager of Turf Paradise. It's a small part. He plays a veterinarian, but he does a great job with just a few lines, and I bring that up because I have done enough television. I've done hundreds of television interviews now because I own my own television production company for a while. It's not dramatic work, but it's the same kind of a feeling where I'm talking to people who are nowadays in the horse racing field, but over the years, experts in many fields, and you're talking to them just casually before you start the interview, and they're beautiful stories and laughs, and the light in the camera goes on, and all of a sudden it's Ralph Cramden and Hamina, Hamina, Hamina. But Vince was great as the veterinarian. How did you decide to cast him in the movie?
Vince is a great actor, and a lot of that just comes from, you know, we were working with as many people from the track as we could to get them in front of the camera and to get them to play generally some version of themselves. A trainer would play a trainer, or a jockey would play a jockey, and it would just be about meeting somebody interesting and finding a spot for them in the movie or writing a scene for them. And Vince just had the right spirit for that veterinarian who's got to deliver some very hard news to Jackson in the movie, but also, you know, needs to do it with some grace and with some thoughtfulness. And I think that's what Vince probably has to do in his job day to day. And so he was just perfect for the role.
Yeah, like I say, it was a small part, but he did an absolutely great job. And again, talking about the authenticity and bringing in some people who weren't actors, there's also a great jockey circle. Yep. They're all in a room and they're all kind of discussing their jockey experience. And from reading about the movie after I saw it, I was just amazed. I'm assuming most, if not all, of those were actual jockeys. And was how much of that was on the page? How much did they bring to the table? Because, again, really good true-to-life scene.
Yeah, thank you. They were all real jockeys, everybody in that circle. Scott Stevens is in that circle. Aki Kato's in that circle. Carl the Truth Williams is there. And really the only thing that was on the page was just, you know, we're going to set up like this almost AA group, and then the jockeys are going to tell their stories. And so all of those stories that they tell in that scene are true to their life, and they're, you know, if anybody's been in any jocks room around the country, you know that jockeys have a lot of time to sit around in between races, and they end up telling stories a lot. And so my job was very easy in that scene. It was just to throw out some prompts for them to talk about of, you know, what's the first race you ever got hurt bad in, or what's the first race you ever won where you felt like you had really, you'd done something great. And then the jockeys just went from there, and it's better than Greg or I could have written any of that.
It's, as I say, completely authentic, and it's a really nice scene in the movie. And speaking of nice scenes, a lot of it just looks fabulous, and it's yep. kind of, as I say, a guy with a film background myself, kind of the golden hour. A lot of it is in that perfect dusk time where you get the perfect blanket of late day sunlight, and there's just a lot of really good looking racetrack scenes in that light. I'm wondering how much of that was an artistic decision, or how much of it was practical and logistical just because you were shooting at a working racetrack.
I mean, a little bit of it was, it's a little bit of both with all of it. It was, you know, we wanted it to look as beautiful as possible.
Mission accomplished.
Thank you. Thank you. But a lot of that came from, you know, our cinematographer, who for anybody who's not well versed in film, the cinematographer is the person who kind of figures out how the image is going to look and runs the camera department. And our cinematographer, Adolfo Veloso, just did a brilliant job of making every frame look like a painting and look like something beautiful. And he really, you know, he really struck on this idea of recognizing that jockeys' lives, a lot of times it starts in the beginning, at the sunrise, and then goes into the sunset, and they don't do a lot in the middle of the day. They start work before the sun comes up of exercising horses. And then the races are a lot of times in the evening or at night. And so we ended up just kind of, it was dictated by shooting around their schedules, a lot of it.
Yeah, and as they say, it looks gorgeous. And a lot of the reviews that I read comment on that. And I will tout, I was kind of surprised. I went to Rotten Tomatoes, and it's a funny name if folks aren't familiar, but it's an aggregator of movie reviews. And so it gives you a good feeling about, you know, where the public and the reviewers are tilting. And I was surprised there was that many reviews already for a movie that's not in wide release. Mm. And then I realized you've been to a number of festivals where all the, you know, critics show up. You're 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a fabulous number. You have to feel great about that. And the majority of the reviews talk, A, about how great the film looks, and B, they just give a huge thumb up to Clifton Collins, and I will agree. And, you know, looking at the press material, Clifton Collins wins the jury award for acting at Sundance. Molly Parker is the other lead in there. She plays a trainer. Clifton plays the aging jockey. Talk a little bit about how you cast your two leads.
Yeah, Clifton was somebody that my writing partner Greg and I had worked with on our previous movie, Trans-Pecos, and he was only in a small part. But he just did so much incredible work in that, playing a Border Patrol agent. And he's got such a varied career where he's worked for Clint Eastwood, and he's worked for Quentin Tarantino and Guillermo del Toro. And he's just, you know, he's worked with all the great filmmakers of our time. And he always is amazing at being able to lose himself into a role. And I think, you know, this was such a hard role to think about casting, because you've got somebody who's got to really do some emotional heavy lifting as a actor, but then also has to slip into this place of acting alongside people who've never acted before and seem as much like a jockey as jockeys who've spent their whole lives doing that. And there's really nobody else who could do that better than Clifton Collins Jr. And I'm really excited for people to see him in this role. And then Molly Parker is just somebody who I'd been a fan of for a long time and always hope to work with. And she always has a great ability to play these characters who can do hold two different things in the hand at the same time and play two different sides of the character and not make the character seem like they're all over the place, make it seem like one person. And trainers have such a difficult role of they've got to be a jockey's boss. They've got to be a jockey's friend. They've got to think about what the owner wants. They've also got to think about what's best for the horse. And Molly just brought so much life to that role in a way that we didn't even see possible.
Yeah, they both. I mean, Clifton does just a fabulous job. He conveys he is a jockey, and he conveys he's kind of a nice everyday guy, and then the anguish of the situation with the career and whatnot. And there's a great scene where the race gets over. Molly says, "Hey, the owner's over here. You want to meet him?" I got a laugh out of that scene. I'm sure that plays out at racetracks all the time, that kind of a situation between the trainer, the jockey, and the owners. I mentioned Clifton won the jury acting award at Sundance. Talk a little bit about the process for folks who don't know. I told you off the air, I have a nephew who lives out in L.A. He and his wife have self-produced a couple of movies and have gone, on the festival circuit, so I can appreciate what goes into it. But winding up, and I congratulated you off the air, winding up with your movie at Sundance, and I think we have a shot of you and some of your cohorts up at the Toronto Film Festival. So talk about the film circuit and the festival circuit and how that plays into then subsequently getting wider release.
Yeah, it's been kind of a dream come true. We made this movie with just a handful of people, just a 10-person crew on the back of a working racetrack there in Turf Paradise, and all the actors were doing their own makeup and wardrobe, and there were no trailers. It was very much, it felt like a family unit making this movie, and then we got into Sundance, and that's just a dream come true for any filmmaker. It's like, I was talking to G.R. Carter the other day, a jockey who's helped us a lot on the movie. And I was telling him, it just feels like, you bought a horse for $10,000 and ended up at the Rainbow Futurity. it's amazing. And Sundance has been something, they were such an amazing platform to kind of launch the movie as, they've been such great tastemakers throughout, the last 30 years in for American independent cinema. And then while we were there, we got picked up by Sony Pictures Classics. And that was just, they've taken such beautiful care of the movie, and there couldn't be a better partner to figure out how to get this movie seen in not only New York and LA, but also across the country where people in the racing world actually can see it, and want to see it.
Yeah, and I think we have a graphic that shows the website if people want to check out the jockeymovie.com. There's a website, there's an IMDb page that people can check out as well for more information. And we were talking off the air, we're what, about a week away from this going into wider release?
Yeah, we're on the 28th of January. It's going to go. It's going to open up across the country. So whether you're in Dallas or San Francisco or Miami, Florida, like all over the place, it's going to open up. And you can, if you look on that website, you can find where it's coming near you.
Yeah, it's certainly up in our neck of the woods. People will be looking forward to it. Anything with a racing theme, we're all about. And again, Clifton Collins does a great job. Molly Parker, as the trainer, a great job as well. And then, again, a cast of some actual jockeys in there, and it's just very, very authentic. Let me ask you this. You talked about your relationship to racing and whatnot. I'm curious as how you got into movie making to begin with at all.
Oh, my gosh. It's a long story, but it just starts with I loved movies as a kid, and I didn't go to film school or anything. I just started making movies in college with friends, and moved into documentary filmmaking because that was kind of the easiest way to do it, of just finding a good story, and you can go out as a filmmaker with a camera and start making a movie. And that's, I always hoped to end up in a place of writing and telling stories. But starting out as a documentary filmmaker was great practice for that, because it teaches you to bring a level of authenticity to whatever you're making.
I like that. Yeah, very good. We were talking off the air, and you mentioned that some of the proceeds of the film will go to one of our favorite charities, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund.
Yeah, we, you know, one of the big things about wanting to tell this story was not only showing people the life of a jockey and what they go through, but a big part of that outside of the beauty of their work is how much they get injured, how often they get injured, and just the toll it takes on their bodies. And unfortunately, as anybody in the racing world knows, when a jockey is permanently disabled from this sport, there's nothing really there to act as a safety net for them or help them out, except for what the PDJF does, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And so after we made the movie, we got in touch with them and locked arms with them. And now a portion of the proceeds of the movie, any profits we get, a portion of that goes to the PDJF to support what they're doing. And we're really excited for people, if you don't know about them, to check them out and hopefully throw a few bucks their way if you've got it.
Yeah, that's a great tie, a really great tie-in, because, again, we do some events for them typically every year, and it's one of the better racing-related charities.
Yeah.
From talking to you, I'm assuming, but I'll ask, are you a racing fan yourself?
Tangentially. I don't get out there much, but I do, you know, every time I'm at the track, I enjoy it.
Have you ever been to Saratoga?
I've never been to Saratoga, no.
Well, if you get up here, we broadcast from the backstretch every morning. So if you get up here, certainly we will love to have you on live with us some summer.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, that'd be amazing.
And before I let you go, I'll ask, do you have a favorite racing movie by any chance? I'm a Boots Malone guy myself with William Holden.
Ah, yeah, that's a good old one. I think my favorite one outside of Jockey is...
yeah, very good.
I'm sorry. No, I think probably the one that's nearest and dearest is Casey's Shadow, but with Walter Matthau.
Yeah, very good. Which I actually believe, now I'm going to have to look it up, I think they shot some of that up here in Saratoga. I'm pretty...
Oh, really? Okay.
But Christy McNichol, if I'm not mistaken, right? I think.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm going to have to look that up because I think they shot...
Yeah, we'll both have to get on... been a while since I've seen it.
That's the nice thing about the internet. We can just look it up.
Clint,
really appreciate the visit, and again, we've given folks a look at the trailer and now a little background, and it's certainly worth checking out Jockey, wide release starting next week, and hopefully people will check it out and enjoy it as much as I say. The folks on Rotten Tomatoes, the 89%, for folks who don't know, that is a huge number and a huge thumbs up. Again, from the festival circuit, these are the top critics from around the country that watched the movie. And again, they gave the thumbs up to Clifton Collins, the thumbs up to the cinematography, and I will add my own admiration on both of those. And my admiration for you, because again, it was fun to have you in as a filmmaking guy, because just to hear you talk about it and to be out there and kind of almost... it's not quite guerrilla filmmaking, but when you show up with 10 people, it's in that realm. And then to wind up
pretty guerrilla,
Sundance in Toronto and get a deal with Sony. I'm thrilled for you, and I wish you the best. And appreciate the visit, and hopefully we'll talk again in the future.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Clint Bentley, director, writer of Jockey. Look for it at a theater soon.
Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions, and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off Exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTB.com.
Welcome back. We'll wrap things up for this Sunday morning. But again, thanks to Clint Bentley, the writer-director of Jackie. It was fun to talk to him as, again, a film school graduate. Always fun to have some conversation about that, particularly when able to tie it in with the racing theme. So you can look for Jackie. Again, goes into wider release next week. And as I say, to make the film with, you know, a small crew and a small budget and wind up at Sundance and Toronto, that's just phenomenal. And then a deal to get a wider release through Sony. So congratulations again to Clint and his team, and thanks for visiting us. And from our perspective here, to have a racing-related movie out there is fun as well. So again, Jockey, you can look for that, as I say, hopefully at a theater near you soon. And I mentioned Casey's Shadow. You know, Clint mentioned he liked Casey's Shadow, and I think that's a lot of people's on the list of their racing movies with Walter Matthau. And I said, I think a film in Saratoga, wasn't Christy McNichol in it? And then I went and looked at, I had to look up and see what, I conflated. There was two movies that came out about the same time, in the late 70s. Casey's Shadow was Walter Matthau, but the Christy McNichol movie I was thinking of was My Old Man. It was Christy McNichol and Warren Oates, and that one filmed in Saratoga, actually. So I was in the ballpark. And like I said, I just conflated a couple of movies from, again, the same era, a couple of horse racing movies that you can look for. Maybe they're available on the streaming services if you've never seen them. I mean, at this point, we're talking 30-some years old. But Casey's Shadow, Walter Matthau, and My Old Man with Warren Oates. And again, My Old Man filmed right up here in Saratoga. Do want to remind you one more time. I was talking about it yesterday, but certainly, and I'll mention it this afternoon as well, closing a little bit later on about dinner time, Kentucky Derby Future Pool. So if you'd like to jump in there. And the odds, you know, looking earlier this morning, all other three-year-olds, we'll see what it is by the time we get closer to the 6 o'clock closing time. But a 2-1, all others is a little bit attractive. Currently, the shortest price of the individual wagers, Smile Happy at 6-1. Tis the Bomb is at 7-1. Zandon 39-1, a little bit intriguing. Mo Donegal is at 21-1. Dash Attack at 34-1 to me is a little bit intriguing. So there are some options out there with odds that at this point in the calendar are in the realm of being attractive. If you want to take a look again at the Kentucky Derby Future Pool that is running this weekend, it closes a little bit later today, I think about 6 o'clock or so. So keep that in mind. Jump in if you want to take your shot. All right, I am going to wrap things up. Once again, I want to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Thanks again to Gulfstream Park for their support during the championship meet. And again, we will be down there looking forward to making the trip to Florida Derby towards the end of their meet. Looking forward to getting back on the road after not really being able to do that over the past couple of years, but should be fun to get back down and visit our friends down at Gulfstream. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this Sunday edition. I'm just checking. I think I've covered everything. So I will invite you to tune in about an hour or so. We'll be back with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. We'll look at some Aqueduct, some Oaklawn, and more on this Sunday afternoon after a very fun Saturday. We'll see if we can keep it rolling on a Sunday afternoon. I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America. Thanks for tuning in. Again, we'll see you about an hour or so with OTB Live.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.